Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Jackie Hendry. Lori Walsh is off today. By the end of the 19th century, most of western South Dakota had been carved up into reservations, government land, or small to medium-sized farms and ranches. Rangeland in states to the south and west had been divided up and fenced in, but the grasslands west of the Missouri River in South Dakota were still mostly open country. The big cattle companies in the southwest U.S. were eager to get their hands on it, and in 1900 they were about to get what they wanted. South Dakota was going to become big-time cattle country. On today's Images of the Past, SDPB producer Brian Gevick joins us with the story of the biggest ranch ever in South Dakota and one man's quest to save just a little piece of what's left of it. Brian, thanks for joining us today.
Glad to be here.
So, Brian, what makes South Dakota so attractive to those big cattle companies?
Well, you know, some of them were born out of the old cattle drives on the Great Plains. That'd be during the 1850s and somewhat later. First and most importantly, as far as South Dakota, the land was suited to cattle and less suited to farming. So that was, you know, kind of a natural fit. Another thing that South Dakota had, it was one of the last places in the U.S. where cattle could be managed pretty much as they had been during the big cattle drives, which meant no fences, no worries in that regard. But the thing that really appealed to the cattle companies was all of the reservation land that could be leased. These guys were not going to be the first ones to do it. Scotty Phillip and some others had been leasing reservation lands for a while. But at about 1900, the big money guys were about to get involved. Now, that's where we'll start with the audio clip that we're going to hear right now. This clip comes from a 1996 SDPB TV program about the Diamond A Ranch, again, the biggest ranch in South Dakota for a while. The clip begins to explain how that came to be. It starts by describing the reality that the Sioux, the Lakota, Dakota, and Nakota, had been relegated to reservations. And the prejudice. There was some prejudice that the tribes just really didn't know what to do with their land.
The federal government wanted the Sioux to become farmers and ranchers. But the Sioux had no history of grain farming and never adapted to this way of life. They continued to live along the rivers and creeks where water flowed and the trees grew and the land gave shelter from the winter wind. This left large tracts of upland grasslands unused or grazed only by Indian cattle in the summer. For the federal government had created an allotment program, giving each Indian 160 acres of land, title to which was held in trust by the federal government. The idea was patterned after the Homestead Act. While farming success was at best questionable, raising cattle and horses met with some success.
The Indians devote their attention to stock raising, freighting, and farming. They have been very successful with stock, nearly every family having a few head of cattle and horses, and many of the more progressive have large herds ranging from 10 to 100 cattle. Perrain P. Palmer, United States Indian Agent.
The climatic conditions are such as to preclude the probability of successfully growing crops in this locality. With these conditions against them on the one hand, there remains but one alternative, which is more congenial to the habits of the Indian and more profitable than the tilling of the soil: stock raising. Ira A. Hatch, United States Indian Agent.
If some of the young Sioux saw the possibilities of grazing stock on the wide open rangeland of the reservations, so did the cattle barons of the Southwest. By the turn of the century, the railroads had reached the east side of the Missouri River. A strip of land 6 miles wide and 90 miles long was opened on the north side of the Cheyenne River Reservation so cattle from western South Dakota, Wyoming, and Montana could be trailed to the railhead on the river at Everett. There was big business for the railroads in hauling homesteaders to their new homes in the west and in hauling their cattle and grain to markets in the east. The Sioux and their sympathizers didn't hold the reins of power in Washington. The railroads did. And southwestern cattle barons were already dreaming of new lands to pasture their herds of cattle. All that stood in the way of their dreams was the Sioux Nation. A Sioux nation nearly destroyed by war, by disease, and by defeat. a Sioux nation the federal government was trying to convert into ranchers on the Cheyenne River Indian Reservation. A Sioux nation that did not want to give up its lands once again. But give them up they did. Over 2 million acres of Cheyenne River Reservation were opened to grazing leases. Some in the federal government felt the decision to lease would be unfair to the Sioux and would be a setback to national Indian policy. The cattle barons of the Southwest were pleased, barons like Captain Burton C. Cap Mossman. His dreams would soon come true. When Cap was first informed of the availability of land to lease in South Dakota, he was in Kansas City. The leases were made with the understanding that livestock would be furnished by the Hansford Land and Cattle Company, a Scotch syndicate. Since Cap could not handle all four tracts being offered, he contacted Murdo McKenzie, general manager of the Matador Land and Cattle Company, to see if he was interested in part of the lease. He was, and he accompanied Cap to South Dakota. Mossman met McKenzie in Tiny Everts, the railhead across the Missouri River from the Cheyenne River Reservation. What they saw when they crossed the river was a land almost untouched by settlement. A land that had supported huge herds of buffalo. A land that could grow cattle. Mossman fell in love.
So, Brian, we want to make sure we get to what happened to that ranch after the fact, but just very briefly, what can you tell us about Mossman?
This guy was something special. I mean, he had been a teenager, and as a teenager, he started herding cattle on these long cattle drives, you know, that we were talking about before, the kind that kind of came up from Texas and drove to Kansas City. He eventually ended up owning a ranch down in New Mexico. He also had a place in Arizona. He became a lawman, earned a reputation as a real tough guy, and he prospered to the point where, well, there's a story about him that he used to light his cigars with $100 bills, so pretty colorful character.
Figures. So I know you also have some audio for us about what happened to the Diamond A Ranch once it stopped operating, or what's left of it now.
Well, you know, that's true. And once we're clear of this, we're gonna talk a little bit about what, you know, kind of led to the end of that. There are several things, and the point is now, though, that you really can't see much of the Diamond Ranch. Obviously, it's been divided up. There may be corrals and different things that you might see if you were on one of the present-day ranches. What you would see if you're driving on Highway 212 between Faith and Eagle Butte, it just looks like a boneyard. It's kind of like Stonehenge almost. Now, there is a guy restoring it, and he happens to be the son of one of the cowboys who worked on that ranch at the Diamond A back in the old days. And we're going to hear some audio from a video clip that I'm working on about Johnny Holloway and what he's doing to try to restore this old corral. Rancher and retired rodeo man Johnny Holloway uses a cordless power drill to screw one end of a heavy board to an upright corral post. Holloway has been working on this project for more than a few months, and he says he finally knows that he'll finish before too many more.
We can sure see the end now, and last year when we started, we didn't know whether we'd ever see the end or not.
The 75-year-old Holloway wants the pens to look like they did when he was a boy. The corral is a few miles east of Eagle Butte, South Dakota. Highway 212 runs past them east to west and only a couple of hundred yards away. Most drivers passing on the highway have only ever seen the bones of the place.
People who drive by, including myself, and it made me sick to see them falling down because I remember how they used to be. I finally told my wife, I'm going to redo them quilts if it's the last thing I do before I die. And they're, here they are, and they're going to be plenty good enough for me to be able to use until I'm not here, you know. And I think that's something that I can be proud of the rest of my life.
Since the pens were built in 1910, tens of thousands, Probably hundreds of thousands of cattle were herded into the Allwood Corral, confined to await loading onto train cars. At one time, the trains took the livestock to a pier on the west side of the Missouri River. The cattle were then taken by boat across the river to a railhead on the east side. From there, they went to markets as far away as Chicago. Johnny Holloway remembers how busy the old corral and rail line used to be.
It was busy for quite some time, a lot of times all day long, maybe into the night. But I know they used to load them train cars, and then there was what they called the Y here. You could see back over that way. They'd load them train cars and back them back up here till they got a load. And I don't know how they did it, but then the train would come and hook onto them cars and head back out with them.
So you'd have dozens of rail cars.
Oh, yeah. There was a train load a week shipped out of here in the fall of the year. And I don't know how many cars was on a train, but I imagine a whole bunch of them. And then whenever they got them loaded, well, they'd come and get them and take them out, and then they'd load some more. So as they get back, well, they'd go again, you know.
In their prime, the stockyards mainly served the Diamond A Ranch. At one time, that was the largest ranch in South Dakota, 1.4 million acres of grazing land and 40,000 head of cattle. A lot of that land was reservation land leased from the Cheyenne River Sioux. The Diamond A peaked in the 1920s. Depression, drought, and new federal policies about grazing leases on reservation land finally put an end to the Diamond A in 1944. Smaller outfits continued to use the corrals for a while, but the old pens eventually began to wear out, and the pace of change in the cattle industry only accelerated. Cattle confinement and handling equipment today is almost all steel. Johnny Holloway is only using steel for the gates of his renovation.
It didn't used to be that way. They was all wood. But I didn't want to go to all the expense of building wooden gates and big heavy wooden hinges, and then in two or three years replace them. So I just chose to do it this way. That's the only difference in what it used to be way back when.
Holloway thinks wood might be a little safer than steel under some circumstances.
You know, a lot of people will probably disagree with me, but I think it's wooden corrals are a lot safer because stuff don't run into it as bad. They can see it a lot easier than they can pipe. And I know there used to be a lot of horses around the country here too, and there was a lot of horses worked here in these yards. And if they'd had them horse was wild, if they'd had pipe corrals in, there'd have been a lot of horses who broke their neck. But there was never any broke their neck in these wooden pens.
The plan is to use these corrals again. If things work out right, Johnny Holloway and a few other ranchers will once more round up their cattle here and load them up for market. The livestock will travel by truck this time, not by train.
So, Brian, tell us in our remaining moments just what's left of that giant Diamond Day Ranch.
You know, that's practically it. That old corral is, they kind of came apart for a number of different reasons. There was the depression, the drought, cattle prices kind of going south, and, you know, they went on for as long as they could. But the main thing is that the federal government changed their policy under the Indian Reorganization Act of 1934, and that changed the relationship between the federal government and the tribes, and it kind of gave control of tribal assets back to the tribes so they could negotiate their grazing leases, and they began to keep a lot more of their own land for their own use. So that's kind of how and why things started to wind down for them.
Interesting. My guest has been SDPB's Brian Gevick with today's Images of the Past, talking about South Dakota's biggest ranch, the Diamond A Ranch, and efforts to preserve what's left of it. Brian, thanks for sharing that bit of history with us. I learned a lot today.
Well, thanks so much, Jackie. Good to be here.